This week we're looking at Isaiah 40, and it's really a turning in the book of Isaiah. Last week we were in 36 through 39, and we saw Hezekiah and what was happening at the end of his life and what was coming for God's people. And in chapter 40, though, we have this hinge point. We have this turning where after those hard realities and after that turning away, the people of God, now in exile, are given a word of hope that they will be restored. And in this chapter, as well as in Dr. Richter's workbook assignments, we really are reminded again that this God is very different. He's different, and this is throughout the prophets. He's different from the other gods in many ways, but one of those ways we bump into is his love. This word, and I say love, there are other words for love, but this version of his love called hesed that you find 250 times in the Old Testament. And it's not found in any other ancient language. And again, it's hard to get your head around it because they have such few words in Hebrew. I think it's only like 2,000, whereas in the English language we have 5,000 words. In Arabic, it's, I think, 6,000 to 8,000. And so here's this word that means so many things, but especially when it talks about God, and again, a third of these uses in the Old Testament relate to God, it means an undying devotion of a superior to an inferior, especially when undeserved. And maybe that's why they had to coin that word, that it's unique to them, because you just don't find that in any of the other gods. So it's not only mercy, because that just doesn't fully capture it, the old King James or in the Septuagint. It's more than that. Again, we can look at the Old Testament scriptures and be tempted to say, you know what, God seems like he's so wrathful in the Old Testament. But when you ask the people of the Old Testament, and you listen to their songs and read their scriptures, what do they say? Oh, he's compassionate. He is abounding in love. He's slow to anger. So that's their testimony. And you see that in Isaiah 54:10. Though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing love, my hesed for you, will not be shaken. And you see that imagery as well of his care and his love in Isaiah 40, in 40:11. We can talk about his strong right arm, and God will judge with that scepter in his right hand someday. And it is true that he disciplines. But I love in 40:11 that picture of this arm and arms that gather up his lambs in his arms. Okay? So we get this picture of a different kind of God, but also we're reminded that biblical prophecy is really not to, even though the pagan kings did this and sometimes the Hebrew kings did it, it's not really to ensure success in battle or in life. It's not just to give guidance. That's not the primary purpose. We see here the primary purpose of prophecy is to call people into relationship. Just like the prophet and the God are in, and God are in dynamic relationship. And that's, again, that's very different from the pagan prophets. They don't want a relationship. Those gods don't want a relationship with you. They want to use you, possess you, to use you. And so this is very different when you look at what the prophets are calling the people to. You see how Moses, the prophet, was called on the mountain and was with God, and now he speaks for God and even as God. Well, God's wanting that same kind of thing with you, that kind of relationship. And here he is in Isaiah 40, reaching for them. There's also a reminder here, too, that that he has not forgotten them. And that's what these words are. Remember now, these people, felt, in some sense, they're going to rule the world. And now they're wondering, in exile, has God forgotten them? And it's a great reminder to us that God, he does forget our sins, but that he doesn't forget us. And so we get these beautiful words in Isaiah 40. This first section, 41 through 48, talking about that redemption from Babylon. And then the rest, you know, much more of that, talking about his redemption of his people and future redemption. And let me just say this on Isaiah 40, 41 through 40, 40 really through 48, speaking of the redemption from Babylon. Not all of them come back from Babylon. Some had read the book, the scriptures, and they knew that place was not their home. But all kinds of cultures that were captured were offered the opportunity to go home. I mean, that's what we guess. All of them who were captured from Isaiah's time were offered to go home. They don't. Why? Because they had been acculturated. Daniel had not. He retained his identity. He retained his pattern of living for God. But sadly, many didn't go back because many were acculturated. They fell into the world of the Babylonians. But Some did return. We see that in our workbook in page 5. Even though the full restoration is not yet complete, they did return and began a new life. So this section on chapter 40 then is, again, I think, needed. We say, well, maybe Isaiah ended. Some people argue with that. I believe in single authorship. I know there's a different tone here, but I think it's a needed part of the book. And I love what Dr. Oswald says. This book is not complete without this section, without these later chapters. Part of it because the understanding, as we've talked about, that the Old Testament in a lot of ways is a battle. There's one God and there are many gods. And whoever wins is God. That's how they understood it. Now again, God did not lose. The Babylonians might have burned down the temple, but that does not mean their gods won. What we're really learning is the culpability of God's own people and that they are being disciplined for their sin. So God could have won, but it was part of their discipline. But here we are reminded in 40 and on, oh, but God will win. The gods are not powerful. The gods don't have any power over God. And so this book is not complete without 40 on. It's reminding us again of the sovereignty and the power of God. Now, if we get into the workbook and what it reminds us about Isaiah 40, just looking through those verses, verse 1 and 2, we get this reminder that they did not see the horror of their own sin. Dr. Richter says their sin wasn't that bad. That's how they felt about it. And we can do that on page 103 in the workbook. We can write that off and say, look, what I do is what I think, what I say, the attitudes I have, they're just really not as bad as others. But here they are being forced to see their own sin and its true horror. And as Dr. Richter says in the video, they saw their own stupidity. But sadly, the opposite can creep in as well. Once we have understood our fallenness and our rebellion and our sin, we can think, as Dr. Richter mentions in the video, that we have no second chances. We got to believe what he says right out of the chute in Isaiah 1:1, that there is comfort for us. We can see it and we can receive it. We cannot write ourselves off. He had told them the truth about Jerusalem, that it would fall, and it did. But he also told them the truth about his plans for restoration. What he says is true. What he says, you can bank on it. And so you and I have to believe him. When you get to page 109 in the workbook, we're reminded in Isaiah 43, where he talks about the new things that God will do, and that's right. But Isaiah is a prophet who really stresses the past. God has acted in history. You can bank on what he has revealed then about himself. You can bank on what he has done in the past. You can bank on his purposes and plans. So do not write yourself off. We're all tempted. A lot of us are tempted to do that. And he gives them this word of comfort. And again, it's a tough word to get to. Dr. Richter is right when she says it is a... she talks about it in a mother-to-child relationship, and there's been a hurt or a boo-boo. There's something right about that, but it's even more than just a salve to a wound or a comfort. Because this is a word, again, we have trouble with because of King James. You go back to the 1600s. It doesn't mean comfort as we understand it. It really, in its original language, means give strength to. So if it really means that, it almost means more of not just comforting, but encouragement, speaking strength into somebody's life, to speak to the heart, literally. And that's what they need. They don't just need hope that it's going to be okay, but they need strength and heart encouragement to do what they need to do. And that's what the Lord desires for them. It's what the Lord desires for us. Not just to get us through, to pat us on the back, but really to give us the strength we need to be who he's called us to be. Verses 3 through 5, we see his determination to come to us, that he will find a way, and we'll talk more about that. And look, I think even as tough as verses 6 through 8 are, they are tough when this reminder that all flesh is grass. You know what? That's not complete bad news, because that means Babylonian flesh is also grass, and it will fade away too, and they do. So they cannot prevent the ultimate salvation or ultimate rescue of God's people. Verses 9 through 11, we see again that this is a God who just comes to where we are. And you see that throughout the Bible. He comes from his place to our place all the time. From the very beginning in Genesis chapter 3, where he finds them when they're hiding in their shame, all the way up to the incarnation, where the second person of the Holy Trinity steps out of glory and comes into time and space for us, to the very end of the book of Revelation, where he will come back And part of our testimony that will be that God himself is with us. He's a God who does whatever he has to do to come to us. And then verses 12 through 26 speak of many things, but I love these reminders again of God's power. Not just of his grace, but this reminder of his power. Verse 15, those nations are a drop from a bucket. And then verse 26, those stars, and so many times stars are said to be angels, have power over angels. And you get verse 26, stars, they're nothing. Nations, nothing. So a reminder again to the God's people when they need to hear God's sovereign and God is powerful. And then verses 27 through 31, again, he talks of him being as creative and creator, and Isaiah loves to drop titles about God. You just see so many titles even here, but also throughout Isaiah as to who God is. But one last thing is this verse 31. Have been told before and will be told after this of the importance of waiting on the Lord. And that's a key word for the prophets. The synonym for trust. And this trust is not a passive waiting. It's anticipating. It's an active waiting. It's a hopeful waiting. And by the way, trusting always typically involves waiting. Because just like them, it takes a lot of time for me to come to the end of my resources and understanding. I love what Dr. John Oswalt says. God is rarely early because of us. God is rarely early because of us. There are going to be moments when we get to soar. There are going to be times when we get to run, or there can be constant walking without being weary. But that's when we come to the end of our rope and we say, Lord, you're going to have to do this. We don't take things into our own hands. We don't take things under our own plans. But we simply wait upon the Lord and his strength, his way, his will, his spirit. Maybe that's a word for us that we need to wait. I've raced through that, but there's so much here just in Isaiah 40. And I hope you've gone through the workbook. There's so much more there for Dr. Richter for us as to God's hope for his people then and God's hope for his people today. Next week we will be in session 7. We're nearing the end, and it's going to be a couple weeks. I just need to let you know that with Ash Wednesday coming up, with some other things coming up, I just want you to know that it's going to be really to about March 22nd till we get back together on this. I do invite you to our church for 6:15 Ash Wednesday service, and then on March 8th, that's on March 1st, on March 8th at 6:15, we'll meet in the multipurpose room, and we'll have BJ Johnston here performing the one-man drama, The Man from Aldersgate, as we hear a dramatic presentation taken directly from John Wesley's journals. It'll be a great night for our older elementary kids, students, and adults to all meet together. So I invite you to that as well. And then we'll pick back up on this study after spring break on March 22nd.